Radio.
Finding Your Calcutta, The Mission and Your Family. A presentation by Peter Holmes from the Finding Your Calcutta 2016 retreat, organized by St. Rafka Youth.
Thank you. The whole idea of finding your Calcutta is as finding the place where God has your mission, like what your whole life's work. St. Teresa, I doubt, as a young child, decided I'm going to go to this place and pick up near-death people from the street, clean them up and look after them. And many people have asked her in the past, why did you do this? And her answers are really quite simple and profound, like they needed to be done. Or I saw the need, or, you know, those kinds of things. A little bit of backstory. Like most children, when I was young, I wanted to be a hero. Most kids have that in them. You know, I want to be this, I want to be that. I figured out fairly quickly after a five-minute session out in the paddock, because I grew up in the country, that I probably wasn't going to play for Australia in any major sport. Even though, I mean, I was very keen, but I was... And I've played, I think, about seven or eight sports at competition level, but it's not something, you know, I'm never going to be the sportsman. But very soon, because my family was very religious, most of the focus in terms of admiration for other people in terms of the religious side of things was for missionaries. They looked at missionaries and said, these people are awesome. They didn't have clergy in this group that I was raised in. There weren't any religious or clergy or anything. There weren't even people who ran the church. It was run by some elders who were more or less behind the scenes. And so the only people kind of noticeable, if you like, in terms of giving their whole life to God were these missionaries that would go away into another country and do mission work, whatever that meant. And we never really found out what that meant, but they just did mission stuff. And then they came back and told us about it so we could give them money so they could go back and do more mission stuff. So I always wanted to be a missionary. And I spent most of my young life thinking, I'm going to be a missionary. And I realized now it was because what I really wanted to do was give my life to something. And that's what we all really want. We want our life to mean something. I wanted it to mean something. And I could see that, I mean, in the 80s, pretty much if you go back and listen to 80s music, it sounds great, but it's vacuous as the time. Pretty much everyone was about money and sex and drugs and whatever. And it was completely devoid of any meaning. So I wanted my life to mean something. And so how do you get to be a missionary? Most of the time you have to be able to do something, at least from the way that we were raised to be missionaries. You have to be able to do something. So you have to have a profession, medicine or paramedic or nursing or a teacher or something. You had to be able to bring something to the mission. You didn't just go over there and say, who wants to hear about Jesus? This is the way Catholic missions work as well. We go and do something for them, something useful, something they need. And sometimes it's much more basic than that. The easiest way of those, I thought, was the paramedics. So I tried to get into the ambulance service about three times when I was coming into the high end of teenagers, and they kept knocking me back because I was too young or too inexperienced. And eventually, it's kind of just faded in the background because I met Lutherans, and the Lutherans had this idea of the clergy, which I argued with them for about two and a half years. Then I became one, and I gave my life to this particular idea of the clergy. And it was in this time when I thought I was living at what I was supposed to do. I felt that my life was very fulfilled. And as a Lutheran clergyman, I was married, and almost all Lutheran clergymen were married. It was expected of us. And I had two children. And I remember this distinctly, and it relates to tonight. I was rushing about the parish, doing all sorts of things for all sorts of people. And it was all very serious and good stuff. But one very wise old lady asked me to come to her house for tea and for a bit of advice. She said, I want you to come for a bit of advice. I thought I would be the one giving her the advice. I was still quite young and arrogant, and now I'm just old. She sat me down and she said, I want to ask you something, Pastor. What if God just gave me two people in my whole life that that I had to spend all my time praying for them, working for their salvation, working hard for them, giving them everything I can, loving them to bring them to Christ. What if God only gave me these two people? What should I do? And I said, well, of course, you know, if you believe God's given you those two people, you should give yourself to that. And, well, but there's so many other people, Pastor. Well, you should give themselves to those two people. You should really, you know, if they're the people God's given you, then you should do that. She said, well, then go home and spend some time with your children. And I went, no, wait, wasn't this about you? Anyway, now, at the time, I kind of got a sting and then went home and more or less got on with my job and realized as that year went on that being a parish priest, effectively pastor, and a father wasn't working together. That's another story. I'll talk about that in terms of the way things work like that. But I realized I was trying to save the world when, in fact, the two most important people that God had given to me at the time, I was not spending any time with. So it's easy to see, it's really important that this person's dying. It's really important that this other person's got a problem. This person's suicidal. My kid says, can you play with my truck? And it doesn't seem as important. Do you see what I'm saying? Or it might be important, but it's not as urgent. It's a different situation to the church, but part of the reason that most Western Catholic celibate priesthood is so that they're not torn in this way. The other reason that I'm bringing this up is that once, I mean, I left, of course, the Lutheran Church and became a Catholic. And as a Catholic layman, the same temptation kept coming up. And I have to say, even now, it still comes, you know, keeps coming up. Save the world, you know. I've always had a Messiah complex. And and it's very much alive and well right now. Just as when I was a little boy, no heathen need fear hell, for I shall teach them. And now, no one, you know, no one is going to worry about anything in Sydney. I will teach them. It's a very dangerous, dangerous thing. And it's also, can I say, very much easier to be a missionary. I'm not disparaging missionaries here, but it's much easier to think about, at least, being a missionary to people I don't know than it is to actually do the hard yards with people I know. Now, I'm going to connect this with Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa's work was not glamorous. It was picking up people who were nearly dead, sick, dying. And at one stage, a reporter criticized her because about half of the people they actually tried to save ended up dying anyway. Why bother? They're going to die anyway. And she said, because it dignifies them. He said, why bother? Most of them aren't your religion. Doesn't matter. They're human. It's not actually about them and whether they deserve it. It's about what I owe them as a human being, what I should be doing for them. And when she was asked, why are you doing this? One of the beggars said, you are like Christ, when she explained why she was doing it. And she said, no, you are like Christ, and I have the opportunity to bind Christ's wounds and to care for Christ. These people are not pretty. If you read anything about the situation she's in, they're not pretty. It wasn't a happy thing. She was watching a significant proportion of them die. There was a thankless task. Most people outside in the West were accusing her of being kind of basically a Catholic propagandist. You're just showing us Mother Teresa because it makes you guys look good. It kind of did, you know, because she was a good example of what a saint should be doing. But here's how it works for us. The glamour work is to go out and, dare I say it, do a talk. The glamour work is to do an apologetic session or get involved or something or convert someone else. Or, here's the key one, someone's wrong on the internet. I can't come to bed. It needs to be done. It might seem like it's much more urgent for the stuff out there, the people, the strangers, everything like that. But actually what's really urgent, what's really needed and what's desperately lacking in our society is coherent and loving families. Why is it more fun or more attractive as an option to go out there and be involved in missions or youth work or whatever else than it is to come home and talk to your family? Why do you reckon? because you can escape the missions. Yes, yes, yes. And also, if you've got not really a long-term relationship with someone, there's all sorts of things you can say and walk away from. At least you think you can, because you don't see the consequences. But what about Uncle Fred or, you know, Cousin Joe or something? What happens if you say something to him? You have to live with it. Sorry?
He'll think you've changed.
He'll think you've changed, and then what's he going to do?
Criticize
you, and he's going to watch you. That's kind of hard. Okay? And anything you do, he's going to have a go at you. And you have to deal with him the next time, you know, Cousin Frida has a birthday party or something. You can't walk away from it. It's always, you're always in your face. And the worst thing, the absolute worst thing for dealing with people is when they live with you and you have to deal with them all the time, because they don't just watch what you're doing when you go out. They see everything you're doing and they know everything you're doing. And they're very, very critical. I don't know if you've noticed stuff about family, but they don't generally go out of their way to congratulate you on doing the good things every day. Go, that's awesome toast. Well done. You think of half the things you've been saying to people on this weekend when it's a little bit different, you're out of the normal zone, but you're making an effort to be friendly and seem like a nice person. But when you go home, half that stuff's going to drop away because you're kind of in, oh, I can just relax now. But it means I'm not making an effort. Who are the people in the whole world that deserve your effort the most? Because they've, especially your mum and dad, because they've given you everything. Now, they may not be good at being a mum and dad. I know I'm not terribly good at being a dad. But there's still a lot of gift there. And it's hard. It's hard. It's really hard to be, to do these kinds of really, really nitty-gritty, boring, and that's the key phrase, boring, messy, smelly things. Now, I've still got a two-year-old, so smelly is very much on the list there. But I have an 18-year-old and smelly is still on the list. There are moments of joy, many of them, but there are also long, long, long stints of agonizing, hard work, which is thankless, even nastiness back. It's thankless. And also, I'd much rather walk out of that and go to work where I can deal with the classroom, because frankly, I can tell them what to do. They're also nice to me because they know I'm going to mark their essays. And it's a different world, whereas all of us in the household, we're kind of letting down the guard, but we're also letting down our effort with each other. Once we're at home, I don't have to make an effort anymore. There's actually a really dangerous thing going on in Australia, is that we have this privacy thing, which is fine and it's good, but once we get into our private zones, we act as if it doesn't matter what we do there. But in fact, that's the bit that matters almost the most out of the whole of our society. Pope Francis just told us this in his latest apostolic exhortation, but all of the popes have been saying this up till now, in that they've been saying, the family unit is the core of the whole of society, and it's the core of the church. It's where vocations come from. It's where real lives come from in terms of Christian lives. It's where all of these missionaries come from. One last little story. The principal of Redfield a while ago, Andy Mullins, went to a sister school in Africa. It's a parade school, but in Africa. So he went there, and he went sort of to swap stories about their lives and everything. And he showed them the slideshow of Redfield grounds and all the buildings. And they all went, wow, you guys have got it made. He showed them all the place around and all the chapels and everything. And they said, wow, you guys have got it made. And then Andy Mullins, because he actually knows what he's talking about, said, now let me show you some statistics about Australia. And he went through how many of the people in the school came from broken families, or there was hurt, or there was some kind of violence, or the society's situation. And the Africans went, what? Why? They had a minute fraction. I mean, they have lots of problems with violence and lots of problems with infidelity, but in terms of the people who go to their schools and their churches, they're saying, we don't understand why you would do this. You've got everything. And Andy Mullen said, that's it. That's the reason. Because we're comfortable and we think everything's fine, We kind of let down the effort, we let down the guard, and we're not doing the basics anymore. The whole society is about flashiness and show. It's about how the house looks from the outside or how it looks for other people or how the car looks. It's not about actually who we are and the substance of it and what really matters. And because we're sort of kind of sanitizing death, it's a way we never see it, we never deal with it. We don't even think about that anymore. We don't think about consequences. Whereas Africans can see in this town, they could see what happens when people die. They know where it's going and they're very focused on the real things, you know, the spiritual things. So in a sense, they actually had it together much more than any Westerner, precisely because life and death and real things were up front. In many respects, the hardest thing we will ever do is deal with our family. The hardest thing. I got into trouble a couple of years back, 3 years I think it was. I did a talk at Eyewitness where I said, marriage is really hard. And I spent the whole talk telling them how crap and how hard it is to be married. And I got told off by two religious, you're going to put them off. They're never going to want to get married. I said, no, I hope I didn't do that. But what I don't want to do, and I had seen year after year after year of young people getting married coming to me saying, am I weird? Am I strange? Am I broken in some way? Why is it so hard? Because anything we do that's worthwhile is hard. Anything we do, it'll take your whole life to get this right. And maybe not even then. Hopefully it will. But anything is hard. But saying something is hard is not the same thing as saying it's bad. In fact, most of the time, something that's easy is easy because it's the wrong thing to do. Taking the easy way out is almost always not a good idea. The easy way out, the pleasurable way out, the comfortable way out is almost always something that's lulling us into something evil or not good at least. I've done a fair bit of counselling of broken families, and almost every time it's not begun with some massive big deal. It's almost always begun with little by little, incremental problems, as in someone hasn't made the effort, someone not reaffirmed their wife or their husband, someone's not respected them, or there's been snappiness, or there's been bitterness, or there's been hurt, and it's built up to a point where something big happens. But almost always, it's about the little things, the little things. Coming back to me wanting to be a hero. My dad, just before I got married, my dad put me aside and said, are you ready for this? I was 23. Yeah, I'm ready. I can take this. He said, are you ready to give your life to this, to your wife? I said, yes, yes. And he said, explain. If she was in trouble, I love her so much, I would undoubtedly defend her. I would give my life for her. And he said, no, you misunderstood my question. I didn't ask if you would die for her. I asked if you would live for her. What do you mean? And he said, dying is easy. I mean, it might be terrifying and all kinds. Some decisions are big and they're terrifying and they're scary, but they're over. And in some respects, like some people have made a comment about me becoming a Catholic, it was quite scary at the time. It was a big decision and it felt like it was the end of the world. But it was over. Once it was done, it was over. And it was very clear what I had to do. The hard decisions, the really hard ones in my life, have been getting up at 2 a.m. to get the baby before, because I can hear the baby starting to murmur, I know my wife's got a migraine. She needs to sleep. I'm pretty sick myself, but the decision is, do I just pretend no one will ever know? She'll get up. I know she will, and she'll never begrudge me because she gets up to the baby. Or do I get up and she'll never know? I mean, maybe the next day I'll say, I got up four times. Then I've just blown all the credit I had for that. But basically, all those decisions, they're hard decisions, and they're hard things to do. And they're thankless things, but they're the same little things, like Mother Teresa picking up someone who maybe will die today. Or maybe they're already dead and she prepares them for burial, dignifies them. The little tiny things in terms of babies and things that I have to do every day. Our latest son, Albert, is 2 years old and he has Down syndrome. So he's had, I think, three or four major surgeries now. He's not really ever going to understand what's involved in his care. and there's a lot of it. So, you know, you might be tempted, and I have been tempted in my darker moments to think, this is unfair. Yeah, that's true. It's not fair on him. Did he ask for this? Did he ask for these things? My little Calcutta, my little martyrdom, they're not real martyrdoms, but is all these little things which matter. The big things that get the flash in the show are actually not the big deal. The ones that make you who you are, the ones that change you, the ones that will define you and also bring you closer to God or move you away from God, that will bind your family or hurt your family, will shape society or destroy society, those little ones are the ones at the toaster in the morning when you're feeling the worst all day. The one before the coffee. You know, I've seen those memes where they say pre-coffee me shouldn't be counted in confession. But the point is it does. All these things matter. That moment. Now, I've talked about having kids because that's the reality I'm aware of. But one of the hard ones these days, and I'm fairly aware that because I'm seeing it in the university a lot, is you guys are still dealing with parents. You're in the stage where you're your own selves, but the parents still manage to be in your life. And it's not always in the happy, hooray, my parents are in town, or or they're talking to me sort of thing, is it? So what I wanted to do is talk a little bit about your families as they are right now. And not just your families, but your church family too, to the people you go to church with, and the people you happen to be with, such as your workmates or your classmates and those sorts of things. The people, the ordinary people you're with, that you hang out with. We're called to make disciples. When Christ said, make disciples. Now, lots of people put emphasis on that word go. When Christ says, go and make disciples. Actually, in Greek, the word go is not emphasized. How do I explain this? If anyone knows what a participle is. Okay. Basically, the word in Greek means when you put something in this particular form, it means while going. It's a background word. The going is assumed in the verse. While you're going, as you are going, as you go to all nations, the key verb there is make disciples. How? Baptizing them. And if it was only that, that would be easy. Okay. Baptizing them, easy, because we could just get a big fire hose and go down to Pitt Street. And teaching them to obey all I have commanded you. Oh, that's the tricky bit. I haven't got that bit myself yet. That's why I have to go to confession, because I haven't learned yet to obey everything God has commanded me. I haven't learned to live and love like Mother Teresa. I haven't learned to unselfishly get up, because I'm still going, I'm such a hero getting up for my wife. Damn, I've blown it. Any virtue I might have had from that has just been blown by pride. Anyway, the point is that we're still learning it. Evangelization doesn't stop when we happen to be currently a Catholic. We all need it every single day. We need to consistently learn and grow in holiness. We need to grow in grace. So we're evangelizing each other all the time, wherever we're at. From the person who's we think is the furthest away from God, who, by the way, often the big turning points, the big changes, you often come from furthest away, not from middle range. And then the ones we think, oh, they're so holy, we don't have to worry about them. Everybody needs evangelizing, and everyone needs it every single moment of every day. What I hope to do, we'll just break you into little groups, and we'll talk about what you struggle with, and you can be very general about this. I don't want specifics, so we don't want incriminating specifics to come out, but be very general. What kinds of things make, maybe I'll call it domestic discipleship. In other words, the fact that when we're in the home, when we're in our so-called comfort zone or our safe zone, maybe it's not so safe, but when we're in that place, what makes it difficult to love, to actually be consistent in treating other people with dignity, respect, and gently, gently bringing them closer to God. And that also, by the way, means that we're on that journey too. Every time we step into this ballpark, we are looking to move ourselves closer to God as the important part of the process. Mother Teresa didn't just say, oh, this is hard, we're going to try and fix the pain. She's actually more than just a fixer-upper, she's actually the solution. In an inhuman or inhumane place, she was the humanity. And she brought them to humanity. In a place of pain, she brought relief. In a place of cruelty, she brought kindness. In a place of lovelessness and neglect, she brought love. She didn't, I mean, you go to Calcutta, it's still pretty crappy. She hasn't fixed it. So people, in a worldly sense, would say, what's the point? The difference is what she was and all of the people she has inspired to continue to do that work. There will always be broken people. There will always be hurtful situations. But while you're still breathing, while there's still life in you, and especially when you have this kind of resource, you're with a bunch of really good Catholic people, you have the resources of the sacraments, anything that's in the past that you're worried about, the priest is here, sort it out, go home fresh. And you have such amazing resources to bring to this. You have, just like Mother Teresa has her faith. She brought that really simple understanding of the human dignity of the other person, no matter how annoying they are or how smelly or upsetting they are. Just with regards to annoying people, we actually need annoying people in our lives. One of the problems with modern society is that we're too quick and it's too easy to unfriend or to block someone online or to just walk away from them, especially in cities. I grew up in the country, and if you didn't like someone, tough. If they were the baker, you got to buy bread from them. There's nothing else. So even if you don't like them, you still had to at least make the effort to get to know them. And you know what? In the end, you ended up friends with the annoying baker. He was still an annoying guy, but you were friends because you'd actually gotten past your initial discomfort with them or initial annoyance. When all the other people in our school picked on someone, I would just go to them and befriend them. Not because they had any virtue or anything like that, but because I was just being contrary. And it's a habit I'm very glad for now, because some of my absolute best friends were forged out of getting past those annoying habits of other people and realizing, hey, there's a really good person under here. And then realizing they're actually much better than me. The point is that we're actually so good at shutting people out as the instant they upset us, the instant they disagree with us or insult us or upset us or you know, annoy us in any way, we're so good at shutting them down, we're actually really crap at being human beings. If we can step past it or just absorb some of that lashing out or absorb some of that nastiness, we can actually get to the point where we're actually much more amazing people in terms of dealing with annoying people. And we allow ourselves to be, I hate the word enabler, it sounds so new age and swishy. We enable people to be who they should be, not the first annoying response. So, in terms of family, most of us are feeling lost. I hope you are, because the problems are big. And if you're thinking, yeah, this is a breeze, you probably haven't been listening. One thing about Mother Teresa which stunned me at first when I heard about it is that she had what they call a long dark night of the soul. Do you know what that means? It only came out right towards the end of her life, but she had not felt the presence of God in her life for decades. 25 years. That she, like, initially she was all on fire and really passionate about her faith, but she had not felt affirmed or the presence of God for 25 years. Now, okay, I've felt that way, but you know what happens when I feel that way? I become a spiritual slob. Basically, I don't feel like it. I'm really struggling to pray. But she did the opposite. She put herself in adoration each day. Imagine this. She's picking up the poor from the roadside. She's doing all this wonderful work. She's praying and adoring Christ in the middle of that spiritual desert. Most of the time, and this is why I'm mentioning this, most of the time family can feel like a spiritual desert. family feels like it's an emptiness and that we're putting in all this effort and nothing's getting back. And also, unfortunately, when we put in effort, often the family will react badly the other way. So it's hard. It's really hard. But again, finding our Calcutta means the same way as Mother Teresa did. We actually stick to the... I mean, she knew, intellectually, she knew this person is a human being and therefore has the dignity and therefore deserves my attention. God, Jesus, is present here in the real present, in the flesh, so he deserves my adoration, as in I owe it to him. She did that not because she felt it, not because she felt inspired or wanted to or anything. She did it because it was absolutely true. Most of the time in any relationship, 90% of what you do is you do because you should. Not obligation in the sense of, oh, I suppose I have to, but because that's what you do. Let me tell you, I'm not going to bounce out of bed at 2 a.m. when Albert has his crying fit, as he does every night. I'm not going to bounce out of bed going, yay, I was waiting for this, or hooray, or I really want to. I'll do it because he's my son and he's crying. He'll never remember it. I don't remember me being two. He won't remember it. Nobody else will know. But it's an act, the tiniest and most sincere, perfect acts of love happen when no one can see it and no one can ever know and there's no rewards in this life. They're the ones that actually go in the spiritual bank, if you like. I mean, sorry to put it in such crass terms, but basically when they're actual sacrificial acts which aren't for the glorious things, the hard ones, the little ones. It's easy to offer my life for my wife, but it's hard to do the dishes. It's easy to do the big things and hard to do the little things all the time. But Mother Teresa's Calcutta is not a glamorous place. It's not a beautiful place. It's a hard working place. I should leave you with encouragement because I don't want to depress you too much. Having a family, having a marriage and a family has been the hardest and most work I've done anything else in my life. It is the hardest. It's also, it's also the most significant and fulfilling and joyful thing that I can say is in my life. And now, finally, God has finally slapped my head around enough that I actually know that's what matters. Looking at my 18-year-old son going to university or my 2-year-old starting to walk, all the other stuff is background. Lots of other people I care about and involved with, but these people and my own father, who's now got Alzheimer's and there's other struggles, and my own mother and my own family are the ones who God has given me, especially. He said, here, these are for you. They're the ones on the roadside, especially if they're broken. They're on the roadside and you're passing by. You're going to be the Levites or the Samaritan. In other words, it's not about whether you should. If the need is there, roll up the sleeves. Get your Mother Teresa headgear on and get into it. And it is hugely rewarding. I'm delighted to be going home to my family. They're all kind of cute right now, mostly because I can tell them what to do. But even when they're frustrating, even when they're hurtful, the fact that God gave them to me means there's something good for me in them, even when they hurt me greatly. I think I need to leave it at that. I don't want to promise you the earth on that one, because family hurts a lot, but also is, remember I said at the start, I wanted my life to be significant. If I did everything else in the world and didn't care for the people around me, it would be insignificant. If God's given me these people, and now it's grown from 2 children to the 8, but also the other people in my life, if God's given me them and I don't care for them, then the significance is gone. However, when I do, that's the significance. It's the meaning and the humanity behind it all. I'll leave it at that. So.
That was Peter Holmes with Finding Your Calcutta, The Mission in Your Family. This presentation was part of the Finding Your Calcutta 2016 retreat organized by St. Rathke Youth. And for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.